gorgeous well-being, sex and beauty. Jane McCartney is a chartered psychologist and she's Radio Gorgeous's new agony aunt. And today we've got an email from Chloe. Dear Dr. Jane, for the past 5 years, I've been friends with a woman I met via work. At first, we seemed to have lots in common, children, work and all that sort of thing. And we even had quite a bit of fun together. And also, we went skiing together with our respective families, although both me and my husband agreed not to do it again, as her children were really horrible to mine and her husband seemed to just want to stay topped up with glue vine as much as possible. But over years, our friendship has become so one-sided, I really don't know what to do. Sometimes I seek to be her personal therapist. She calls me at all hours to talk about all types of things in her life, from her in-laws to her hair colour, and gets cross if I'm totally not available for her. She freezes me out at work if she thinks I'm doing something she isn't involved with. When I had an extended family holiday last year, she told people at work that I may not be back due to my emotional issues. When we meet, the only topic is herself, her problems, her, in brackets, dysfunctional family, and any mention of me is quickly dismissed and dispatched with a throwaway comment. Frankly, I've had enough, but it could become an awkward situation at work, as she's just had a small promotion, and although not directly my senior, she's certainly behaving like she is. Help! She's driving me nuts. Oh my God, this sounds like hell.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah. And Chloe would have started this relationship as an equal to this person. But very quickly, it sounds like the friend, you know, sort of like she sounds quite toxic in her life.
And very needy.
And very, very needy. And her parameters, the friend's parameters would be, okay, we can continue this relationship, but here it is. You are at my beck and call. I will call you. I will get my advice from you and things like that. And it just, and I think all this happened without Chloe actually knowing, because Chloe's probably quite a nice and decent person, like most of us are. And you kind of get that little voice in the back of your head that goes, oh, this isn't quite right, but I'll just go with it because actually we're friends and I'm a nice person and she's a bit needy. This thing's happened to her and I could perhaps help her out or something. And it just becomes entitled. And this is why her friend won't think twice about phoning her up and discussing, you know, the problem that she has with her in-laws, because she's become her sounding board. She's become, Chloe has become effectively her unpaid therapist, if you like. It's somewhere for this woman to go and kind of dump on. Because believe me, once you've kind of dumped on somebody, you feel so much better for it. But Chloe's completely wrung out because she's got loads of other things to do in her life. It's interesting, isn't it, about the going on the skiing holiday, and she couldn't stand it because the friend's children were being horrible to her children. But I think that's kind of, that's a reflection on kind of what's going on in the adult world as well. And the friend's husband just completely goes out of it by going off and getting, you know, completely
self-medicates.
Absolutely. And that's probably what he does all the time. So she's this coiled and wound up person. And what's she got in her life? She's got Chloe in her life. And, you know, everybody needs a Chloe, but Chloe doesn't need her. So she's got the situation at work as well.
That's the hard thing. I think that's the crux. If she didn't have the work problem, she could just chuck her.
She could, yeah. So she's got to be, you know, diplomatic about it. But she's not, you know, she isn't her superior, even though she's behaving like it. So she maybe needs to kind of make it not exactly official, but semi-official, and speak to her actual superior, her actual line manager, just to clarify. So she'll probably go along and say, oh, just to clarify, you still are my, oh yeah, of course I am, why wouldn't I be? Somebody might get a bit paranoid, a bit protective, which is probably no bad thing, because it is making sure that her toxic friend really doesn't, you know, can't get in there.
So would she kind of put that, copy her in even, so the text, you know, to be emailed to the kind of superior, so she knows, yeah, just checking.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So when, you know, the superior comes back and says, yeah, okay, I'll just put this in writing for you, just to confirm, you know, I don't see kind of quite, you know, what's going on here, but just to, you know, to say, you know, because there's a bit of confusion, you know, she, you know, Chloe can play on the confusion of her friend. But yeah, just to make sure that the boundaries are actually, you don't have anything to do with me at work. And if it's up to me, which it will be, because as we evolve, you know, we're going to have less and less. So when she phones her up, Chloe has to say, if she's still doing that, Chloe has to say, this isn't a right time for me and I'll get back to you when I've got time. And a friend won't like that. And what'll happen is she'll quickly find another Chloe, because this is what is the MO of these type of people.
Yeah, but the thing is, I can really know how it's happened, because how can she say no to someone? Because she actually, even though she's frustrating her, she is her best friend.
She is. And there's, you know, well, maybe Chloe needs to just have a little bit of a reflection about herself. Is what is she getting out of the situation? There's something, you know, that I work with often, which is what I call a drama triangle, where you'll have a victim, a persecutor and a rescuer.
Okay, so tell us who's who in this.
Okay, so in this case, Chloe's, you know, and these roles are all interchangeable as well. So she'll present herself to Chloe as the victim and make Chloe the rescuer. Oh, I'm having a terrible trouble with my in-laws who are being the persecutor, say, for instance. What can I do? What can I do? So Chloe kind of goes, okay, I shall rescue you. And I feel good for doing that and stuff. But then that role suddenly changes and she feels the victim to her toxic friend. And she's looking out there for somebody to kind of sort her out and kind of put her right. But maybe there isn't somebody, you know, she can speak to her husband about it. He's probably bored of it and kind of agrees.
So get rid of her.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it's a really interesting dynamic that goes round. But what Chloe has to do is be able to step out of that, step out of her role as being one, the victim to this woman, but also the rescuer to this woman, because that gets confusing. Step out of it and just make kind of her own executive decision not to kind of, you know, be too involved in her life. So when she phones her up and says, oh, you must do this and let's go here and, you know, tell me about this or something, she actually has to say, okay, I'll have to come back to you on that one. Or, you know, I haven't got time for that at the moment. I've got this going on. If, you know, if you want to get together and we can discuss my issues and your issues and put her issues first, it'll be the first thing that, this, you know, she won't see her for dust.
Really? Do you think that the friend is just not a very nice person?
No, and it's her personality. And what she'll do is...
What's her personality disorder then, do you think, the friend?
She's not here, so I can't kind of diagnose a proper personality disorder. But, you know, personality-wise, it sounds like she needs a Chloe in her life. And she's had a Chloe in her life for, 5 years. She will just move on. And she will have a history of people that... She won't understand that she's just wrung out and used and they're behind her and she's looking for the next one. That's what she'll do. She'll just move on to the next person. So in her more senior role, maybe that's what... It'll justify it to herself. Okay, Chloe's done with now. I need to be more on somebody with a manager.
So actually, being strong with Chloe won't be as... strong with a friend will not be as bad as Chloe's thinking.
No, I don't think it will. I think she'll have a little, you know, because she's comfortable with the situation. So she won't want to change.
Do you think she might be addicted, though, to the friend's drama?
There is a little bit. I think I don't think she welcomes it. I don't. There's just a little bit because there's something about, okay, that's you sorted out. Whew. Actually, and I kind of get a bit of a high from the relief of sorting you out. But actually, then there's the next time, which might be in 10 minutes' time or it might be in 10 weeks' time. But there's always going to be. So there's a little bit, you know, as I said, Chloe, you know, to be a rescuer, you have to have a victim. So there's something about that little dynamic that Chloe needs to think about. And should she be focusing on other things that give her much less stress and much more pleasure?
So do we all have triangles in our lives like this,
Jane? Oh, totally. Absolutely. Yeah. Work, you know, relationships.
I think my husband, you know, he always says, oh, I rescued you. And I go, what? What are you talking about? I was really happy, you know. When I met you, I was at the height of my career and he loves to think that he rescued me.
Oh, it's interesting, isn't it? So he's rescued you. But, you know, well, maybe next time he says it, ask him what he was rescuing you from.
Well, he thinks living in Hackney, but I just enjoyed it, you know. I was at the height of my creative powers and I was in a band. I was really,
You're enjoying yourself.
Yeah, he
rescued you. But isn't it interesting how he puts himself in that role? And as I say, you cannot be a rescuer without a victim. You weren't a victim, but he was putting you in that because I'm looking for somebody to rescue. And so there's that interesting dynamic. But as I say, if you think about it as a triangle, the victim is always at the bottom bit of it. They're interchangeable. So what kind of goes on here? So
why do you need three, though, for victimhood?
Because you can't... So you can't be a victim unless somebody's persecuting you. And you can't be a rescuer unless there's a victim. And then you can't, you know... So you, as the rescuer, you're rescuing the victim from the persecutor, even if it's suggesting that, oh, well, maybe you don't go around to Christmas, you know, for your in-laws or whatever. It's even... So it's an interchangeable thing. But, yeah, you can apply this little drama triangle to every single bit of your life, seriously. You know, standing in the queue at the post office when somebody's getting grumpy behind you or something. You're not going to do it. You're not going to waste energy. But it's amazing how much you can actually apply it to in your life.
So how would you deal with that?
Well, you would think, say somebody's behind you and they're pushing you, say, you know, in the post office, I'm thinking about a personal situation. No, I'll tell you another one. Years and years ago, I was in a post office And a man. This
all
was,
happens to you in post offices.
Oh, it certainly does. There was this man, awful, awful man, and he had a small child with him. And for whatever reason, he hit the child. And, you know, said, you can't do that.
You said that.
Yeah, yeah, and a few other people around. Because obviously it's a child and we need to, you know, we need to sort them out. And he wanted to, you know, show his authority over that. So he said, if you tell me that again, or somebody tells me, I'm going to hit this child. So he was using threats. I know, it was disgraceful. It was And what do we do? We all kind of turn into, we're kind of with him as being, you know, our role from we're going to rescue that child has now turned into, actually, are we kind of now...
Are you persecuting?
Are we collaborating with the persecution of this child? Yeah. Because we're actually, you know... So it was a really awkward situation. But, you know, and somebody should have just called the police. It was as simple as that. Yeah, but this was so many years ago that that sort of thing probably wouldn't have been responded to, sadly. Yeah. But yeah, it's an interesting kind of dynamic that you can look at and you can think, where is my role? What is my role here? Am I playing the victim? There's a difference between playing the victim and actually being victimised. And that, you know, Chloe's friend, she plays the victim, doesn't she? She plays the victim to the in-laws, to the family, to whatever's going on in her life. But she's not actually being victimised. So you've got to work that one out as well. And you've just got to think about, where is my role?
But is Chloe being victimised?
She is, by the friend, yeah. And this is where she looks for somebody to help her, like she's sorted somebody else out, and she's not getting. So she probably gets a bit hacked off and a bit annoyed by, you know, by the husband, as you say, by going, oh, God, I've heard this all before. Why don't you just, you know, in my black and white world?
Yeah. Yes, see... I often find men can really see, get, you know, problems. They just say, oh, do this, do that. But women don't work like that. We have to sort it all out.
Yeah, or we try to sort it all out to our detriment, because we try and make it right for absolutely everybody. But what tends to happen is we're at the bottom of the list, you know, and we're completely wrung out because we've made it right for everybody else. And Chloe's friend are the types that aren't like that, and they'll go round... kind of sucking the life out of people.
Like that.
Yeah, totally.
Have you heard the expression radiator and drains?
No, go on.
Well, so if, you know, so I've met you, I meet you once a month, and whenever I've seen you, I feel just full of warmth and joy, and I feel like great after I've seen you. And then there are some people you meet and they literally make you feel drained and you feel lacking in energy and despondent. And they're the people, I suppose, she's got a bit of a drain on her hands.
She has, or somebody I knew, I know what you're talking about now. Yeah, he used to call them emotional hoovers, because they would just suck the life out of people. And then there's you spent at the end of it, and they're just skipping off down. And that's what happens with Chloe and her friend. She phones up and belly aches and moans about her in-laws or about her finances or about holidays or about what, you know, the decorating or whatever it is. But because she's kind of, you know, got all the right noises from Chloe... She's
unaware of it.
Yeah.
She's probably unaware of it. That's true. She could be doing it unconsciously as well.
Well, yeah, we'll cut her a bit of slack and maybe. Mm. But, you know, that's not for Chloe to kind of start trying to alter her personality and her MO that way. What Chloe needs to do is just think, no, you know, with your promotion at work, that's a really good excuse to kind of, you know, maybe distance myself professionally / personally from her. And I, you know, once she gives Chloe those messages, her friend those messages, I think it won't be long before actually the friend kind of goes, oh no, you're beneath me now anyway, and I've got new people.
Great advice, Jane. Okay, what's the next one?
Radio Gorgeous, pirate radio for Vogue readers. Dear Dr. Jane, I'm nearly 45 and want to have a baby more than anything. My long-term partner knows what I want. He's in his early 50s with 3 young adult children from his first marriage who he supports. He's never said he doesn't want more children, but avoids open discussion about a baby. He says he loves me and doesn't want to lose me, but he always says he needs his own space. I get very upset when friends say I should get rid of him or take the plunge as a single mother or visit a sperm clinic or even look for another partner. I feel I do most of the running in our relationship and have to arrange our social life, including arranging his children to come and see him, which is always difficult to arrange as they have very busy lives. I also hate actually having them over, as they always seem so ungrateful and sulky at anything I offer them. How far do I test my relationship on the issue of wanting a baby? And that's from Francis. So... it's quite a big one, this.
It is. And there's a lot going on there, Frances. There often is. When somebody kind of writes in or contacts us and just kind of says, oh, this is my one problem, there's inevitably loads around it. So let's kind of just kind of compartmentalise things here. So you want a baby and you say you want a baby more than anything. So that's important to you. So, and you're 45. So you need to start properly exploring your options. Don't be waiting for him to come back. Now, he's not said an overt no because he doesn't want to lose you, but he's certainly not saying an absolute yes because actually he's been through it all. And, you know, we'll come on to his children in a minute. But if this is what you want, Francis, then this is what you should be pursuing. And it might be that you have to pursue it via, a clinic or, you know, it's a big, big move.
So maybe you should listen to some friends.
Yeah. You know, not necessarily, you know, going out and starting a new relationship with somebody that wants children is one thing. But at 45, the old clock's ticking. And by the time you've established that kind of relationship, are you going to be in a position where it's not going to work for you normally? So if this is your really one priority, then you should focus on that.
And be practical.
Absolutely. Mm. Start looking into the options. What have you got to do? How much is it going to cost? You know, are there, you know, whatever it is, you're not actually going to do it, but do your research right from now. So if suddenly he kind of goes, oh, right, no, that's it. I really don't want the baby and that's it. That's the end of our relationship. You're not kind of completely at the beginning.
No, you're not hanging dry.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's really kind of important that you do that. You pursue that. Now, he doesn't say no to the baby, but he doesn't say yes. And by his not saying yes, that's, you know, take that as a no. He doesn't want a baby. He's had three children. He's gone through the whole baby thing. He doesn't want to do that all again. He's got three children that sound kind of a bit nightmarish, to be perfectly honest, that he doesn't seem to want to make a lot of effort for. He doesn't seem to want to make a lot of effort for stuff because she says, I do all the running, and he'd be quite happily sitting there doing nothing. And that's really unfair on you and your relationship. So, Francis, what you need to do is you need to speak to him and you need to tell him he's got to start. If he wants to have a relationship with his children, which you are happy to organise and host, he's got to do some of that as well. He's got to perhaps be the ones that coordinate their diaries to get them to you or to get them to him. Now, he might be a little bit fearful that he doesn't do that because actually his kids may turn around and go, oh, sorry, Dad, you know, well, we've got this to do, we can't do that. And it's a reflection on him.
So he's scared of rejection.
Yes. Mm. Absolutely. And it's not rejection with a big R, but it's just that kind of subtlety. Yeah. So, and we, you know, Francis doesn't say the reason why he broke up with the kids' mums, what's gone on in the past and stuff, but there will be history there. You know, if they say no to Francis, that's fine. They're saying no to Francis and I can deal with that. But if they say no to me, then that's something I perhaps...
Really hurts.
Yeah, I can't deal with. Mm. So that's something that perhaps needs to be kind of explored a little bit further down the line. The thing for Frances is, at 45, she unfortunately has not got all the time in the world and she needs to focus on that. When it comes to the kids... Mm. Maybe there's, it'd be interesting to know if she could kind of form, out of the three of them, there's bound to be one that's probably better than the other two. Mm. So it might be interesting to be able to kind of, you know, form some better relationship with that one who can then be the linchpin to the other two.
Nice.
So when it's, say, a, you know, Dad's birthday or something like that, you can go to the one and say, okay, then A, can you tell B and C, please, this is what's happening, and let them be the ones that negotiate the times and things. Now, if that doesn't happen, that's a testament to kind of the kids, and maybe they're not worth bothering with in the first place as well. But when they come, there is that sense of kind of the ingratitude that goes on, and, you know, what is Frances to them? You know, she's just the social secretary, the person that cooks the meal, organises things. It's interesting to think about how she is perceived by them. And if she can, have a discussion with the partner about it, you know, how she's made to feel by them, because it's important to her. And if she is potentially... They are going to have another child between them. And that would be the ideal.
That would be maybe half brothers.
Absolutely. Sisters. They've got to be able to kind of have some kind of decent relationship with this new child.
She needs to demand more respect from them.
She does, yeah. She needs to have the respect that is just duly deserved. You know, she doesn't sound like she's done anything wrong for them to be like that. But, you know, they're obviously harbouring something. And whether it's just, you know, they can't be bothered.
Their dad's divorced. Their mum might be... Speaking in their ear, saying she's a cow.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
So many issues.
Yeah, or he's a sod because he went off and left me and then he's got together with Fran. Yeah. You know, there's tons of stuff going on.
Another thing I'm interested in as well is that she says she wants a baby more than anything else in the world.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering whether that you saying to her, go for the sperm bank, she will have to really, really question whether that's what she really wants.
Absolutely. That's exactly.
Because I think that maybe it's a projection of sort of, she's in quite a kind of not a brilliant relationship. Yeah. So it's like, if I have this, I'll be happy. It's like, Do you see what I mean? It's like going for something that you can't have, and then it's easier to say, oh, my life's terrible because of it.
Absolutely. And we have the term plaster baby, the one that just comes and sticks the plaster over the terrible relationship. And, you know, you see families that have got, you know, 7, 8, 9 kids.
Yeah. I'm a plaster baby. Are you?
No, I don't think so.
But I wasn't a boy, so very disappointed.
Okay. Well... You know, it's interesting, but yeah, I think you are absolutely right. Very perceptive that, yes, if you kind of get to somebody and say, right, you start doing your research, and then you come back to them and say, oh, if you've done your research, how much would it cost? What's the time scale? What's the, you know, the advice and stuff? Yeah. And they're not doing it because, oh, hang on, we're just going to pursue this. Then it highlights their ambivalence. She says, I want to baby more than anything else in the world, brackets, because it'll make it better. Brackets, brackets. Actually, no, I know it's not going to. But... she may want to, you know, it's a really natural thing that, you know, most women want to have kids.
Yeah.
And she might really want it. And she might surprise herself, actually, because it could be this catalyst that she then kind of goes, no, actually, I am going to have this baby. And all right, if I agree that I'm going to be a single parent with this baby, that's what will happen. Mm. And, you know, she kind of makes that agreement.
Yeah, so she's got to, it's actually her making some big decisions.
It is, because I feel that the husband or the partner as well,
he's sitting on the fence.
Exactly. Yeah. And he's aware of her, you know, her biological clock. And it's almost like, well, if I keep you kind of going, keep going for 10, you know, 5 years,
it'll be over.
Yeah, naturally it'll be too late anyway. And that's, you know, we're casting him in a bit of a shadow there and that he might not be thinking that, but there's a little bit of me that thinks he might be. So Frances needs to focus on her.
And what she really wants. Yeah.
And she should just start doing a little bit of research about, say, you know, artificial insemination. Let's just stick it at that and just see where that goes and see how she feels about it and allow herself to kind of, right, I've done my research, right, you know, written it all down or saved the pages or whatever. Let me just reflect on that and come back to it in 2 weeks' time and almost say to herself, okay, you don't have to make any decisions. Put it in a drawer and allow yourself to come back to it in 2 weeks' time. And then what do you think about it? Just kind of allow herself that kind of a little emotional distance rather than, oh, God, I've got, you know, because she might start reading forums and, you know, websites and stuff that say, oh, my God, 45, you're going to be far too late. Get it done now, this moment. You've got absolutely. Yeah. But, you know, if she's waited till 45, she can probably wait till 46. She'll probably be, you know, there's not going to be a lot of difference. Wow. So she can, you know, but she really does need to focus.
Find out whether she, I think it's the question is whether she really wants
it. Yeah, no, I absolutely right. But what she wants is for the relationship to be different.
Yeah.
And that, even if she doesn't have the baby.
Yeah, then she's got to put down some new parameters.
Absolutely. She's got to, she can focus on the relationship.
She can say, sit him down and say, this isn't working for me because.
Absolutely.
You know, get her needs.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Sorted.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
RadioGorgeous.com.
So what's the next one, Dr. Jane?
I think we have got Julia.
Okay, Julia. Hi, Dr. Jane. I'm contacting you as I met my current partner when I was 19 and we got together recently again through Facebook and we're now going out. We're both in our early 50s. I'm not sure what's happened to him, as when we first met, he was kind and generous and fun. And now we've been going out for more than 6 months. There's been a big change in him. He says I'm not allowed to see his friends as I flirt with them. He does not take me anywhere and we just stay in and watch DVDs. The most exciting thing we do now is get a takeaway. I'm upset as my marriage ended in a horrible divorce and I waited a good 5 years before I wanted to date someone. I trusted this man, but our relationship seems to be a bit limited. That's from Julia.
Julia. Oh, Julia, you do have my sympathies because it's almost like he was on the lookout for somebody like you. You had certain vulnerabilities, your marriage ended, you kind of, you know, no matter in what circumstances a marriage ends, people feel vulnerable. They feel, you know, defective and rejected, no matter what.
There's a sense of failure on some level.
Totally. Yeah. And you did the sensible thing by kind of going, I'm not jumping straight into the, you know, out of the frying pan into the fire.
Dating.
Absolutely. Yeah. And good for you, Julia, for doing that. But unfortunately, there are a lot of, and I will use the word, predatory, but not necessarily in a sexual way, because that's what it's always kind of associated with. But there are a lot of predatory men out there looking for somebody that they can control, that they can kind of keep at their behest and start isolating as well. And we read about this time and time again, you know, that this is what happens. And it starts with little things like, oh, you know, do you kind of have to wear that dress? And, oh, you know, maybe we could just stay and it's more cosy if we do. And making it sound all a bit romantic and twee to begin with. But then next thing you know, you haven't left the house for 5 years and he's locking you in, you know, it's most extreme circumstances. And it does happen because it's completely and totally and utterly about one thing, which is control. And the reason why you get fellas like this that want to control is because they have a completely fragile ego, which for whatever reason, I'm not going to go into their kind of psychopathy, why they might be like that, but what they're doing is protecting it. And if I kind of have this fantasy of, oh, this girlfriend, wife, you know, whatever, that will do exactly what I want them to do because they, in my mind, want to do it because they're just agreeing to do it, not thinking about the reasons that, you know, they might be fearful or they just might be fed up of trying to fight against it, that keeps their ego intact. So what's happening here is that she's kind of, she doesn't sound like she's gone too far down the path. A little bit, you know, there's the isolation going on. So the alarm bells are ringing. But what she needs to do is, she either needs to kind of say to him, this isn't working and we need to change and we need to change tack, or she ends the relationship. And
that's what she's scared of, yeah, though, because she's been on her own. She's been vulnerable. Yeah. She also might feel romantic about this man. She knew him years ago.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It could have been a bit of a sweetheart.
Totally. But then she said, yeah, exactly. And she's got her 19-year-old eyes on.
Yeah.
He's kind of capitalising
on that.
She
knows where he's from. You know that thing, that sort of scary thing about dating online you don't know. Whereas he's got history, hasn't he?
He has. But then, as she said, you know, the first thing she says about him is that they've changed. He's changed. What's changed him? Now, no, let's not kind of completely dismiss the relationship completely, but it needs work on it. And the first thing she should maybe do is say, actually, you know, we need to go and see somebody together to iron out these, you know, just call them little kinks at the moment. Her saying that she doesn't like being isolated or having to stay in or anything. Chances are he will say, you can go and see somebody if you like. It's nothing to do with me. Again, we've got our old friend, the ego there, being protected and things. But that kind of gives her an indication of, actually, I'm not going to change. Now, she can change her response to him. She might not be able to change the situation, but she can change how she responds. And ultimately, that change might be, sorry, buddy, you know, this isn't going to work, because if I kind of scroll forward 5-10 years and I'm in exactly the same situation.
Yeah, sitting in watching DVDs.
Absolutely. I'm going to be unhappy. I'm going to be miserable. You know, I'm going to be probably on, you know.
But then doesn't he tell her he loves her all the time?
He does, because that's kind of, you know, that's part of the deal of keeping somebody like that close. He would not want to get rid of her, because he, as you say, he's got to go out there and find somebody else. So he's going to do what he needs to keep her there by telling her that he loves her and how marvellous she is and everything. But it's so conditional, isn't it? Oh, I love you, Julia. Brackets, the thing that she doesn't hear him saying is, because you're doing what I want you to do. And that needs kind of proper. So I don't want to write her relationship with him off completely, but it needs work. And they both need to agree to go and see somebody. And if he won't, and he just kind of dismisses it, or he says, no, will you go and see somebody because you're the one with the problem, then that is an indication that he is not likely to change. Now, she might, in her mind, agree to go, okay, better the devil you know than you don't. And then that'll kind of, you know, that'll kind of give her some, you know, almost peace to think, well, actually, I am accepting this. Alternatively, she will kind of go, no, I don't want to do this. It'll catalyse what she needs. She, deep down, she's got that voice in the back of her head that's going, this isn't right, this isn't right. You deserve better than this. And she blooming well does. She does deserve, we all deserve better than that, to be with somebody that wants to control us for whatever reason. And
see, don't you think there's quite a thing about control, that people feel, women feel safe with a man controlling them?
Yes, and well, no,
security.
Secure, yeah, but it's about nobody needs to be controlled. Nobody should be controlled. So boundaries, security, yes, you know, don't do that thing because it's dangerous or whatever it is. But there's something, or care. There's a difference between care and control, isn't there? And that, you know, and he's well and truly on the control spectrum. So it might be dressed up as care, but it's not. And she knows that. That's why she's writing in. That's why she's getting.
Why else would Julia write in?
Yeah.
Gosh, it's fascinating. Thank you so much for coming on to Radio Gorgeous. So if you do have a problem, do write in to Dr. Jane at info@radiogorgeous.com, or you can tweet us @radio_gorgeous, or you can Facebook us on Facebook Radio Gorgeous. And also, if people want to contact you, Jane, and personally come and see you, how would they contact you?
Okay, so you can look at me on Twitter, which is Dr. Jane McCartney, or you can look at my website, which is drjane.co.uk, and there's a contact page on there.
So looking forward to next month and having our great chat. Thanks yeah. so much for coming on.
It's been brilliant as ever.
This is a Radio Gorgeous production for Radio Gorgeous 2017. For more information, go to radiogorgeous.com.